Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good afternoon from the Sandy Bob Show. Today is February 26th, and we will be asking for call-ins today for questions and maybe some things you can tell. I'm going to hand the program over to my husband, and he will continue. Hold on.
Good afternoon, everybody. Today should be a lot of fun. I'm calling it Open Lines because I want anybody that's called in to chime in and add to the discussion. And I thought there's several different subjects I want to talk about today. And one subject that I thought was kind of interesting was, and this I didn't even know that this until last night. I was listening to Coast to Coast, as I frequently do, and I'll wake up in the middle of the night and I'll turn it on and listen to it for maybe 15 or 20 minutes and then turn it off and try to go back to sleep. But last night, George had a special guest on, and his name was Brett Farrell from Australia. And he specialized in releasing entities. As you know, that sometimes if people get weak spots in their auras or go through traumas or something, you'll have entities that have passed over that will glom onto somebody, and maybe their mental body or whatever it is. For anybody that knows really what this is all about, you know, please, their astral body, please chime in. But he said that he's not a Christian, but he did learn that individuals have a tremendous amount of power that they're not even aware of. And he went through college and became trained as a hypnotherapist. And when he discovered that he could help people get, he could help people get rid of their entities. And what he does is, and it's very simple. He says that the reason why people glom onto other people is because after they pass over, they're lost. They're like in a dark zone, and they have no clue as to where they are. They're just totally lost. And he says what will happen is they will come across a human being that's still alive on the physical plane, and they can relate to that. So they glom onto them and just like going for a horseyback ride, they just glom onto them, and it gives them a sense of reality. And some of these people that pass over are kind of funky. You know, there's good ones, bad ones, all sorts. But what he says is that he has the ability to actually contact these entities. He doesn't have to be present. He can. All you have to do is call them up and tell them about, you know, who you are, where you are, and what the situation is, and he can actually contact the entities. And he says it's trauma-free. It's not like an exorcism or anything, but all he does is tell these people, you know, that, hey, you can have your own life. Just go into the white light. And he directs them to the white light, which is probably the white light of the astral plane or maybe the causal plane. He didn't explain. Maybe he doesn't even know. But anyway, as soon as he points these entities to the white light, they're delighted to leave. At least they have direction, and off they go, and then they leave the person alone after that. So I really thought that was really kind of interesting. And anybody, before I continue on, does anybody have any comments about entities globbing onto people and their auras when they were traumatized or had weak spots or got drunk and invited them in or whatever? Anybody like to comment? Don't everybody talk at once. All right. Well, if nobody wants to add anything, I thought it was kind of interesting. He has a contact site in Australia. He has a website and where he contact information. One of the other things that he brought up, and I thought, Claudia, you might find this very interesting. He says not only do humans that passed over Gly-minded people. He says a bunch of aliens will Gly-minded people also, and ETs. And he says that they are extremely resistant to go into the white light. They don't want to, once they Gly-minded somebody, they don't want to let them go. And Brett Farrell, this guy I'm talking about, learned that he has the power to tell these aliens, if they don't leave this guy alone and just go somewhere else, that he will put them, he will make it impossible for them to ever get back to their home planet. And he locks them out and puts them in kind of like a, I don't know exactly what it is, like the, you know, maybe the Phantom Zone for all I know, but some he makes it impossible for them to go back to their home planet. And he says in most cases they don't believe him. And then he says, well, okay, let me give you a demonstration. And he actually has the power to demonstrate that he can keep them from going anywhere, just lock them up and freeze their ability to travel. And he makes a believer out of them, and then they leave the person and leave them alone after that. Have you heard anything about anything like that, Claudia?
Hello. This is Claudia in Texas. Yes, some of that information is right on. in fact, most of it is right on. And it is a subject that is now becoming more popular in discussions. Because the aliens that are here in the physical, and especially the ones that have focused or zeroed in on the planet Earth, we're very attractive to many different species for various reasons. Some species are here to collect minerals, gold, silver, whatever. Others are here to collect water, or plants, or animals consume flesh or meat. And they don't differentiate between a cow and a human. Both are the same to the hungry, flesh-eating extraterrestrials. One of the things about glomming onto them, it's easy to access the energy of a human when they're unaware and don't believe that they're any extraterrestrials. It just makes it easier for the entity to do that. And the reason they do that is because they are able to siphon off the emotional energy of the person. When you're really afraid or scared or whatever, this is the most delicious food to those types of entities. So they attach themselves to the body, usually around the spine area or in any of the pineal gland area, anywhere that there's an easy access point. The extraterrestrials collect this energy and store it. They have means and capabilities of doing this. And a lot of movies, TV shows, whatever, have been about this type of procedure. But even though it's very factually presented, a lot of people cannot accept that information. It just doesn't seem real to them. And all you can say is, well, before we discovered gravity, quote unquote, the idea was something else. But after we discovered it and scientifically studied it, then we became familiar with it and weren't afraid of it anymore. But we still had the old ways in the early centuries of having spells and witches and witchcraft to explain these phenomena that occurred in front of us, but we had no information about. So we're still in a quandary in the 21st century. So, okay, here we go. We're having an adventure in areas that we were unfamiliar with. But we're being educated very slowly and very carefully into what is happening around us. And this is helping us to wake up, to become aware of what's going on, and to question, You know, curiosity is a sign of intelligence, in that you're curious about something, you go and look for it. Maybe, like example, when we go on the internet and we're Googling some subject we want to know more about. Well, all the information is brought up in pages of information and websites and people. And there are shows like George Noory's Coast to Coast. He investigates all subjects that is giving information out to people to help them better live their life. When people have tragedies like a sickness or an illness or things like that, they're akin to that frequency, that vibration. And this attracts those extraterrestrials who feed on that type of energy. It doesn't matter. Like, some people can eat some types of food and not be bothered by it, and other people can't eat that type of food and be bothered by it. Like peanuts. Peanuts can be a very difficult for some people to digest because of certain factors in their physical makeup. But we're not the only creatures on the planet. Bees eat honey. Reptiles eat flesh or fish or whatever. So we have a whole gamut of opportunity to observe other life forms and how they live. The only thing is that we are only observing in a very narrow range of life. That which is on our planet. And we haven't quite, I'm going to say most of us, haven't quite gotten to the point where we can accept that there are other living forms of corporeal life that have a different lifestyle than we do. We've got to get to the point of being able to accept that information and then deal with it personally. It's going to take some education. Maybe we have to meet a reptilian entity, extraterrestrial, face-to-face, and then come to the realization that they might know more than we do. So as we go along, life enlarges itself in front of us. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Claudia. That was wonderful. You know, another thing that this gentleman had to say was, I found very interesting, was remember that Indonesian airliner that disappeared and what was it, 3700 or it was that airliner, and it kind of disappeared off all the charts, MH 3700 or something like that. Or 370. Anyway, that was in March of several years ago, and right after the crash, Red said he was with a group of people that decided to see if they could use their abilities to locate that aircraft. And he said as soon as he started meditating or dwelling on that, he found himself underwater. And he found himself in the fuselage of the aircraft, which was underwater. And he said the fuselage was broken in half from impact. And he wound up in the back of the fuselage. And there was an Asian lady there. And this Asian lady was screaming. You know, she was just, you know, screaming out loud, why didn't they fix it? Why didn't they fix it? You know, they knew we were way off course. Why didn't they do anything? Why didn't they do anything? And he started screaming as soon as she saw this guy that went to visit, she started screaming at him, you know, why didn't they do anything? And as he was there underwater looking at her, he noticed that most of the other people, there wasn't anybody else around. And apparently all the other people that had died in the crash had left the scene. They'd gone off to the white light or someplace. They were no longer there, but this Asian lady was there, and he was trying to figure out why this Asian lady was still there. And so he started looking around the cabin, and he noticed that toward the back of the aircraft, there was two Asian adults with two children. And as soon as he saw them in the back of the craft, this station lady had not seen them. And we got a call from Kelsey.
Oh.
Hang on just a second.
Okay. Okay.
Okay, I'm back, everybody. Hello?
Yes,
Claudia, are you still there? Okay, all right.
Yep.
Anyway, so he notices this Asian couple toward the back of the aircraft, and this Asian lady up front didn't even know they were there, and he turns her around and says, "Hey, are you with them?" And as soon as she saw them, she recognizes that was the rest of her family, and they all together, and boom, they went off into the white light. And then after that, he decided, well, I'm going to go up front and check out the cockpit. And when he got up in the cockpit, the captain of the aircraft was still sitting in the pilot seat, and he was like in a like in shock. He was just sitting there in the cockpit, totally in shock over what he did. Apparently, the pilot intentionally took it off course and crashed it. And the pilot was just in a state of, it was like in a stupor, in a state of shock over the gravity of what he had done. And so he checked with the other people that he deals with, the other guides or whatever you want to call it that he occasionally works with, and he was told to leave the guy alone, that there was nothing that could be done for that pilot. He was in such a state of shock for what he had done that there was nothing they could do, just leave him be. And then right after that, he found himself back in the room with the other therapy session people, and he related the story to everybody. And then later on, he said he actually went back to check on the captain, and when he went back later on, the captain finally figured out what was going on, and he left, and he maybe went off to the white light, but he was no longer inside the aircraft. So it was. You have something to add?
Yeah. Pilot of that plane was
sure.
Hi, this is Sandy, Bob's wife. The pilot of that plane was actually a programmed robotic.
He was.
And he was programmed to crash the plane.
Was he physical or is he a robot?
No, he was a robot.
Well, that could explain why he was told there was nothing that could be done with the guy if he was a robot. That's the first I heard of that. Anybody else have any comments or like to add anything about this particular story?
Yes, the fact, this is Claudia in Texas, just the facts that there are robots, quote unquote, walking among us, look just like us and act and react just like us humans, and we don't know it. And but we're learning about it now when we get robot calls from companies advertising their product for you to buy. So much sophistication has come about in our technology that now we can be fooled real easy. And robots are almost as what you would call close to sentient as possible. And they do have awarenesses. And so the pilot, was in shock and couldn't be reached. But all of a sudden, a right signal was given, and he was able to react to the situation, understand it, and then move away from it, move out of the situation. It was like being locked in a program on a computer. You have to press Control-Alt-Delete to stop the computer to get out of the program. And this is the same way with humans. We can be easily, mesmerized into a certain thought pattern, and it'll take quite a bit of manipulation, maybe a sound, a loud sound or something like that to jar us awake. And right now, most of the population on this planet, in my opinion, is that they're totally asleep and are just reacting to the situation of the moment and haven't got to the point of asking what's going on. As soon as we start to ask what's going on, we start noticing things, little incidences that come to our attention, and that helps us to wake up and get out of the stupor that we're in. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Claudia. I didn't know about the robots. So, like in the Star Trek movie, Data, he's a real entity, and they're out there, huh?
Yes, sir. But just like us, I act and react. Just like those robot calls you get on the phone to buy carpeting for your house or siding or new roof, and they can pretty much handle a normal interaction. But if you ask the robot caller a question that's out of sequence, that they're not prepared for, they can't continue. Like, how's your mother doing? You know, that just stops the conversation right there.
So yeah, how's the weather where you're at? You know?
Yes, and especially a sentence like, how's your mother doing? They're not prepared for that, and so they have no answer to respond. So it gets more and more interesting. And we're being introduced into sales tactics that are being used to promote a product or get you to buy something. I mean, look at the football games or the baseball games now coming up. A lot of advertising of the sponsors of a show, like in the halftime program, they entertain you and give you a moment to go get the snacks at the snack bar or whatever. This is a whole setup just to get your dollar. And you willingly give up your dollar to buy your Coca-Cola or whatever. As we go along, we're learning more. And the ones who are really fast at catching on are children. The youngsters, even though that they are marketed for toys or games or whatever, and right now gaming on your little computer, handheld device is fascinating. It's captured thousands, millions of kids, and they are being introduced to different concepts in these games, most of them destructive because it's a blow-up-something game, so or kill somebody, the bad guy. And it could be anybody from, a drug dealer to an extraterrestrial. It's a new way of living in the year 2019 on the planet Earth. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Claudia. That is so informative. And thank you, Sandy. We should have talked about that some other time. But first I ever heard it before. Now I notice we have a number of other callers that have joined us. Anybody that just joined us care to add anything? Okay, well, that was great, Claudia. Now I'd like to switch gears, and I'd like to spend a minute talking about the World Trade Center. There's a professor named Judy Wood, and she wrote a book that's like a college textbook. It's a standard-sized textbook and weighs about 10 pounds. And she did an analysis on what happened at the World Trade Center. She's not saying who did it because she has no idea who did it, but she did an engineering analysis of the facts of what happened at the World Trade Center. And I'm not going to dwell on this too much because I'm only halfway through the book, and I'm sure I'll get a lot more information about it. But in the half of the textbook I've read so far, what she has scientifically proven was that when the World Trade Centers collapsed, there was no explosives involved. There was no a lot of rumors out there about, it was a demolition where demolition experts went in and put charges on each floor and set them off and caused the buildings to collapse in a standard format Other people said thermite was used to cut the iron beams and cause the collapse. She proves without a doubt that there was nothing whatsoever to do with explosives causing a standard collapse, like a demolition company would go in and cause a building to collapse in its own footprint. None of that took place at the World Trade Center. And she said both the two towers collapsed in under 10 seconds. Now, if the World Trade Center buildings had collapsed as a result of demolition, each building would have taken 90 seconds to fall, because the premise on a building collapse that's done by demolition charges, the upper floors will blow, and that floor will fall down onto the floor under it, and then they'll blow the charges for that one, and they time it to just as the upper floor hits the floor below it and the group of floors, they set off the charges one after the other, so like boom, 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 boom. Well, when you have 110 stories and it's about 1 second per floor, it takes 90 seconds to bring the building down. Well, she unequivocally proves with her engineering background that that did not take place. And so anybody that is interested could buy her book and read it. It's What Happened to the World Trade Center. What she shows is the buildings were turned to dust. They were destroyed at the atomic level, the molecular level or atomic level. The buildings, all the steel was turned to a fine dust and no longer retained its structural integrity. It was just dust. It wasn't metal anymore. When they looked at the wreckage after everything, all it was dust. There wasn't even one faucet from a sink. There wasn't any toilet seats or anything. Sandy has a comment.
Just a little comment here. I was at the doctor's office yesterday, and we had been talking to the nurse practitioner, and she was a nurse that was actually sent out to the World Trade Center after the catastrophe, and she said there was literally dust. Everything was dust. So that just proves what Bob was talking about and what this gal had written in her book, What Happened to the World Trade Center. So it was just interesting.
You know, and it was, so anyway, what was interesting is, you know, I'm only halfway through the book. I don't have the answer what it was. Well, other than as everybody knows, the word that is being used for what happened was a directed energy weapon. And, you know, directed energy weapons are pretty much unknown to the populace. I didn't know anything about directed energy weapons either. But one of the other characteristics, so all these rumors about the airplanes hitting it, causing the fuel in the airplanes, causing the metal beams to lose their strength from the kerosene of the airplanes, you know, causing the building collapse, it's just a total fabrication. There's absolutely no truth in that whatsoever. So I just thought I'd throw that out. And the other thing that I've learned is that within a 7-block radius of the Twin Towers, there were 1,400 automobiles and trucks and fire equipment that was absolutely destroyed. Now, tell me how two airliners flying into a skyscraper are going to cause vehicles 7 blocks away to be turned to rust. And what's interesting about these 1,400 vehicles, a lot of them look like they just turned to rust. I mean, all the plastic and everything is just gone. I mean, the engine blocks of some of these are disintegrated. I mean, there's no one, you know, a lot of engine blocks are like cast iron, like for a V8 engine in a Chevy SUV. It's a cast iron block and gone. Just nothing there. It just there's just an empty hole under the hood where the engine used to be. And another interesting thing about what happened was a number of the vehicles, one half of the vehicle looks like it was in a horrendous fire, and the other half of the vehicle looks like it just came off the showroom floor. Now, for anybody that has any common sense, how in the world would two airliners flying into a World Trade Center, on a high level on the floor, cause a SUV seven blocks away to have half of it turned into rust and the other half in pristine condition? So that's some of the other evidence. And then you also have World Trade Center building number 7, which collapsed, and it wasn't even hit by an airliner. It collapsed, and even the news announcers were standing in front of the building announcing that World Trade Center 7 collapsed, and you could see behind the news reporter that the building 7 was still standing. So somewhere in there, there was something that was pre-planned on what to say. Now, I guess I could tell another quick story about this. We have time. There was this one lady right after 9/11 who worked at the World Trade Center. She worked on, I think, somewhere around the 52nd floor or something like that. And it was a single mother, and she had a little kid that she had to drop off at the babysitter every time she went to the World Trade Center. And on this particular morning of 9/11, she was running late with her kid and had a hard time getting her kid dressed. I guess the kid wasn't feeling so hot and was really cranky and wouldn't put his clothes on and all that. You know how that happens with kids. And so she dropped the kid off a little bit late at the babysitter's, and she said when she was driving over the World Trade Center, she was really afraid her boss was going to get really mad at her because she was, running late to being at work. And she said that on a normal day when she gets to the World Trade Center, if she doesn't get there like 20 or 30 minutes earlier for her job, she has a very difficult time finding a place to park because all the parking spaces fill up and there's no place to park. So she was worried about that. And then when she actually arrived at the World Trade Center to go into work, she found that the parking lot was half empty. And she said, well, this is really strange, but she was delighted that she could actually find a parking spot right away. So she jumped out of her car and went running in to where the elevators were, and there was maybe a half a dozen people standing around. And the World Trade Center that she worked in, they have 4 elevators that go up to the upper floors. And being on the floor that she worked on a normal Monday morning, she said that she would have to wait for 4 cycles of the elevators before she could get on. That's how big the crowd would be. And she says only a half a dozen people got on her elevator, and as soon as the door opened, she stepped right in with a half dozen other people and went right up to her floor. And when she got to her floor, she stepped out of the elevator and walked down the hall to where her office was, and she was kind of wondering. The hallways were dark, and she said, on a normal Monday morning, all the offices on both sides of the hallway down to her office were busy. The doors would be open. People would be running in and out. And she went down to her office, and her secretary was there. And she walked in, and she said, well, where is everybody? There's nobody here. And they sat down, and they started discussing why nobody was in the World Trade Center. And so she... on her floor, they had a bunch of law offices. They had a bunch of stockbrokers and accountants and all sorts of people like that, very professional offices. And there was only 2 offices open on her floor. And so she sat down with the secretary, and they were puzzling, well, what's going on? Where is everybody? How come the parking lot isn't full and only a handful of people came into the building? And so they thought, well, maybe it's a Jewish holiday or something, because, you know, the Jews have holidays in September. So they pulled out the calendar and looked at the holy days, and they found out that that particular Monday was not a holy day. It wasn't Yom Kippur or anything like that. So they were really puzzled, and then they thought, maybe they were doing a marathon race. A lot of times New York will have these races, marathon races around the city where they shut down a whole bunch of streets and they let everybody off and they go and watch the race. So they literally called the mayor's office to ask the mayor, if it was a holiday, if there was some sort of event going on, why there was nobody in the World Trade Center. And so the mayor's office said, no, it's just a normal day, just like everything else. And they just could not figure out why nobody showed up. Well, while they were, they tried everything they could think of, and they called some friends and see if they knew what was going on. They said, we have no idea, why all the offices were closed. So anyway, while they're pondering all this, the phone rings, and it turns out to be this lady's babysitter. And the lady's babysitter said, your kid is really sick. I can't deal with him. Come get him. And so this lady told the secretary, says, well, tell the boss, I'm sorry, I have to leave. I got to go take care of my kid. When the boss comes in, and he hadn't even arrived yet, tell the boss that, I'll contact him later and tell you what I'm doing with my kid. So she goes down the elevator, jumps in her car and drives over to her babysitter, which is like maybe six blocks away. And she parks out and she parks in the driveway and runs into the house. And as she enters the house, the babysitter is in the living room with a widescreen TV on, and the first airplane hit the World Trade Center, and they watched it. And then after that, they were glued to the TV while all the news press and everybody else was, telling everything. It became a national news, at that point, and they were watching the whole thing. And if it wasn't for this lady, her kid being sick and having to go to a babysitter, she would have been one of the first victims to go down in the World Trade Center. Well, anyway, what I find interesting about all this, for all those people that say that, this was, done by a bunch of hijackers that flew the buildings into the World Trade Center and caused the buildings to collapse, it turns out that there were 21,000 people that lived or that worked in each of the towers. And of the 21,000 people, only 3,000 people died. Now, my question is, does it make sense that out of 21,000 people that are normally elbowing their way into the building on a Monday morning, lawyers and attorneys and CPAs and who knows what else, why would 18,000 people decide not to show up for work that particular day? Does that make sense? Unless somebody knew ahead of time that something was going to happen. So, anyway, anybody have any comment about that story?
Yes, this is Claudia. I really find that very informative that there is a scientific study presenting evidence that is counter to what has been given out to the public. And it takes a very, to me, a brave person to present a different viewpoint and to back it up with scientific facts. You can't argue with certain laws in science. If you throw an apple up in the air, it's going to fall down to the ground. It's not going to float or go off the earth. And yet here we have graphic evidence in front of us showing exactly what happens when something that is not a normal end result of, a building collapse being different, and so much dust and powder being part of the scenario, it shows how much asleep we are and that it's going to take a lot of, I guess you could say, a lot more, maybe. I don't know what it's going to take to get people to take a moment and consider the whole situation, the evidence, counter evidence, what's being presented. So thank you for sharing that with us, Mike. I mean, Bob, we really have a wonderful opportunity right now in this moment in time to question and to look and see if we can see what we're looking at. You know, like, can you recognize? You can't recognize a forest because there's so many trees in the way. Okay, here's another chance. Thank you.
Well, you know, thank you, Claudia. Now, that brings up a good point that I'd like to share with everybody. I know most of the people listening right now are aware of this, but there may be people down the road that tune in and listen to this talk show down the road. And this would be a good time to share the new you with everybody. You know, there's a lot of things going on out there that we have no idea what the answer is. You know, we've been lied to and we've been brainwashed, we've been drugged down, all these things have been happening to the human population. And there is a way out of all this, or a way to find out what the truth is, and that is to do a new you session. And what the new you is a way of contacting the real guides that will show you the truth of what's real and what isn't. And so you sing new you about 10 or 15 minutes in the morning, sing it 10 to 15 minutes in the evening before you go to bed. And by doing it 15 minutes in the morning and 15 minutes at night, day after day, you're showing the real guides that you have intent to find out what's really going on. You're not going to buy the party line anymore. You really, really, really want to find out what the truth is. So you sing new you, and you can sing it like this. You can sing new you, or you can sing it new you, kind of like the old Beatles song. You can sing it any way you want, but sing it, and you will attract the attention of the real guides, and you can ask them whatever you want. Any question you have, you can ask them to give you an answer of any question in your life that you want to know about, and they will answer your question in your dream state. Or maybe even in your waking dream, things will pop up that will show you the answer to your questions. So I just want to share that with people. And there is no time like the present to start doing that for everybody. Anybody else want to say anything at this point?
Hi, this is Kelsey from Huntington Beach. Listen to the kid. Sounds like that kid maybe sensed what was going on and got sick. Maybe he sensed he might lose his mom. And so that happened. I don't know, but yeah, the kids are very sensitive and intuitive and aware, and things affect our physical bodies from the other dimensions and the other levels, not just what we eat here or what's happening here. So it's coming from those other levels first to get here. Thank you. That was a great story. Thanks for sharing.
Well, thank you, Kelsey. Thank you. Well, now the next thing I want to talk about is Claudia's favorite subject. You know, years ago when I was in the churches and studying the Christian religion, studying the Bible, and I was really trying to find out what the truth was, this was probably back in the, I'm going to guess maybe mid-80s or early 90s, somewhere back in that time frame, I was trying to figure out the truth of the Bible, and I decided to order a book called The Lost Books of the Bible. And I started reading through The Lost Books of the Bible, and I bought this book. I actually bought it right out of a bookstore at the time. It was a fairly new publication. And that book I bought has long since disappeared, and you can't find it anywhere. You can't get it on Amazon. I don't know why that book has completely disappeared off the face of the earth, but one of the things that I remember reading in this particular book was an old story about Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden. And the way the story went was God created Adam and Eve, and Adam and Eve repeatedly committed suicide. They would jump off cliffs, they would drown themselves, they would kill each other. They just did not want to live. And it took about 6 or 7 times of God recreating Adam and Eve, according to this book, before Adam and Eve settled down and decided not to commit suicide anymore. And I could never, ever figure out what in the world was going on. I mean, here you have a glorious, wonderful God creating man for the first time and blessing him and doing all these wonderful things. Why in the world would Adam and Eve want to commit suicide? It just did not make sense to me. And over the years, well, now I've come to understand what that was all about. What that was all about was the God that most people think is that wonderful, glorious God of a wonderful heart and all these things that everybody attribute God the Father, quote unquote, as being a very benevolent, wonderful, loving God. As it turns out, it wasn't that created Adam and Eve. Adam and Eve were created by DNA experimentation. And it was done by a group of reptilians led by Enki. And it turns out that when Enki used his DNA engineering expertise, he took the primates from planet Earth, altered their DNA, injected some of their own DNA, and made Adam. And as soon as Adam became a living being, the way humans are today, they were very conscious and very aware of who they were and what they were there for. And I know a lot of people may find this really, really hard to swallow, but if you read the Bible, in the Bible it says after Adam, you know, was around for a while, God came back and said, well, Adam needs a helpmate. And the helpmate happened to be Eve. And so God said, well, what I'll do is I'll make a helpmate for Adam and I'll create woman. And in the Bible it says that God took a rib, put Adam to sleep and took a rib out of Adam and used that rib to form woman, to form Eve. Well, you know, most people have studied that and they're like, well, how in the world is God making a woman out of Adam's rib? Well, it turns out if you do a study of the Hebrew writings, that word for rib was never understood. Nobody could understand what the word for rib meant, and even up to this day, most people don't know what it really means. But the term for rib really means Adam's DNA. That's what the rib was. So right in the Bible it says that Eve was created out of the DNA from Adam. Well, Adam was already perfected, and so now that you have the perfect man, the reptilians made a woman so they could do reproduction, and it was done out of DNA. Well, my question to people is, well, if God can use DNA to create Eve, why didn't he use DNA to create Adam out of using the primates for the original basis of creating Adam? And so that's how the story goes. And they were fully, when Adam and Eve were created, they were fully aware of why they were created. There were two reasons why Adam and Eve were created. Number one, they were created to be food for the reptilians from Orion. And second, they were to be the slave labor to go in the gold mines and mine the gold off the planet for the reptilians, because they had a dying planet back in Orion and they wanted food and they needed gold to take that back and help heal the atmosphere and heal the dying planet back in Orion. And Adam and Eve were fully consciously aware that's why they were existed. Now, let me go to part two. Part two was a couple of months ago, I was able to find another edition of Lost Books of the Bible, and it has two books in it called Adam and Eve 1 and Adam and Eve 2. And if you want to read that, Adam and Eve were constantly in fear of their lives. They were so afraid they could hardly make it through a day. As a matter of fact, Adam and Eve were constantly fasting for 40 and 80 days at a time. They were fasting and doing sacrifices to God because they were in supreme fear of their lives. I mean, it doesn't make sense. I mean, if you think of God as a loving God, why would his creation be living in fear all the time, thinking that if they didn't do a sacrifice and repent of something, you know, that they would be killed and tortured or eaten or whatever? I mean, you can read that right in Adam and Eve 1 and Adam and Eve 2. So my question is, why were they so traumatized? Well, they were traumatized because they knew that the gods that created them were, you know, might eat them at any time. They might come to them in the middle of the night. Okay, you're my midnight snack. You know, and that's got to be pretty terrifying for somebody that's fully aware. So anyway, in order to get Adam and Eve to comply, they set up a system where they created cattle and sheep and other animals, and they made a pact with Adam and Eve, and they said, well, I'll tell you what. If you will raise these cattle and animals for us and you will sacrifice them, we will eat the cattle instead of you. So we're still going to use you for slave labor, but at least you're not going to be eaten for food. So we're going to let you raise cattle and sacrifice your bulls and cows and your sheep, and that has become the foundation for the sacrificial religions, like the Jewish religion and the Christian religion are all based on sacrificing, and that's where the sacrifice started. And the promise of return, the reptilians did a false flag operation when they were in the Garden of Eden. They had one of their other reptilians come up and tell them not to eat a certain fruit out of a tree, and Adam and Eve did it anyway. They got talked into it. It was a false flag operation. So Adam and Eve were kicked out of that real nice place where they were created, and they were promised that down the road, a savior would come back and have the ability to return them to the paradise of the Garden of Eden. And that's the religion today. Jesus is going to come back and return you to paradise. It's all a false flag lie perpetrated by the reptilians. Now, I have Claudia here who has firsthand knowledge of exactly what God looked like, how he was, appeared to Adam and Eve as a shimmering person and pretended that they were gods, but they're really reptilians that altered their form for Adam and Eve. Claudia, would you like to expand on that for us?
Yes, sir. Thank you. In the garden, which was really the farm that the reptilians who came to this planet or discovered it first used to supply their home world with food products. These were called Orions because they came from the constellation Orion. They look like lizards, like geckos that you see on that Geico commercial. They don't talk because they don't have the vocal cords to talk, but they can squeak or squawk like that. They don't need that because they communicate by telepathy, mental telepathy. Excuse me. They have great mental powers and capabilities. They can look at a person and know immediately what that person is made of, because they have the ability to read the person's DNA information, just like we read in a newspaper. Over years, they have developed this capability. Now, one of the other things, attributes that the Orion creatures, let me get a drink of water. Okay, they have learned, or their species lives many years, and by many years, I mean thousands of years. Now, that's hard to accept in a moment, but just bear with me, and you'll understand why I brought that up. A year in our life goes very quickly. The reptilian amount of time of a year is 1,000 years. Now, if you lived 1,000 years compared to one of our years, when you got to be 70 or 80, you would be 70 or 80 years on Earth. The reptilians who live on their home world in Orion, which is in the middle star of the belt of Orion, they live thousands of years. For them, it would be 700,000 years. So in that time, they have the time to gather information. They have learned a lot about how to manipulate DNA, the codons in the DNA, and so on and so forth. They can change whatever they want on any kind of corporeal body. One of the things that this has given them the ability to do is to animals that have short lifespans, mammals like us, they can experiment to see what happens and follow it through several generations. So when they came to Earth and they improved or upgraded the smartest monkey on the planet, they were able to see what effects had of their genetic manipulation. They are genetic scientists on the genius level and above. So here they are with a smart monkey who is sentient and can operate machinery and do slave labor and can be eaten at the same time. This was a win-win situation for the Orions, not so for us. We were in terrible jeopardy and lived in terrible fear all the time because they know that the Orions could come and eat us at any time. Now, an Orion body form is over 300 feet tall and weighs a couple of tons. So, yeah, we would do anything they said because they had the power, so to speak. So as the smart monkeys of humans lived on this planet, they were given certain privileges and a place to live in the garden and given food to eat and shelter. One of the things that the Orions could do in their present body form was to hypnotically or mentally command the monkey to bow down and worship them as a god. The Orions told the smart monkey humans, "I'm your god." And they would do little parlor magic tricks. Come appear as a ball of light and shimmering. They could levitate certain things like a rock or something mentally. They could change water, the molecular structure of water, to another substance. So here the humans were convinced through tricks, mental tricks and aberrations, and also given mental suggestions, just like a hypnotist gives you a mental suggestion, you're a chicken, and to squawk like a chicken, and you'll squawk like a chicken in those nightclub acts. These happen all the time in front of us, but we don't connect the dots. You see, does this same thing happen in another genre, like at church? I don't know. Who started church? Well, the Orions, in order to control their monkeys, one instigated the idea of God, and to bow down and worship the shimmering light in front of them, and who was speaking to them. There was no body, it was just a voice, and telling them to do certain things. And then they could, in some instances, if a person was injured or hurt or sick, they could heal them with just simple antibiotics that they had, or something to that point. And that would make a miracle in front of the smart monkey's eyes. So naturally, it reinforced the concept of God. And God concept was used to control the smart monkeys. They had thousands upon thousands of these smart monkeys working in their minds, growing the crops on their farms. And also, if they weren't paying attention and behaving, they would be used as food source also. Flesh is flesh. Doesn't matter if it's human or cow. It's still edible to the Orions. So there we have the beginnings of control of the smart human monkeys. And it has continued down to this day. An offshoot of one of this control factor is government. Laws were made by the Orions and through their quote-unquote scenario of a God program. And people were told to worship and follow it, and if they didn't, terrible things would happen to them. They would have committed a sin and need to be punished for it. So the humans were very carefully led down a path that was leading to our present day control through government and through religion. It's a sad state of affairs, but some people are waking up and starting to question this control. Well, do I need to really do this? What if I don't do it? What's going to happen to me? Sometimes nothing happens at all, because you're of no importance to anybody for anything. We just want you to get up and go to work. Everybody knows where they are on Monday morning at 8 o'clock. They're either at work or in school, or if they have other means, neither place. So here is the conundrum. Do we stay asleep and unaware and just believe what's being said to us? Or do we wake up and question and ask and observe and see what happens? Lots of people observe the Twin Towers, as Bob just spoke about a little while ago. Lots of people observe many miracles. And they say, oh, this is God, this is God. Orions have the capability to travel through many vibrational levels of existence. An example would be like when somebody blows a dog whistle, the dog hears it, but the human can't, because we can't pick up that frequency. Or like we'll see our cat in the living room staring into space and looking intently at something. They're seeing a different frequency or level, and they can see what's going on there, but we can't. Us humans cannot access above a certain red frequency or a certain blue frequency. We just can't see it because we don't have the capability. So a lot of stuff can go on around us, and we will not be aware of it. Recently in the news, youngsters in school were able to use their cell phone to talk to another youngster in another classroom. And on a certain frequency, the teacher could not hear it. Now, we tried this experiment ourselves with our family, and it was so. The adults could not hear the cell phone message, but the other children in the room could hear it just fine. But when you grow up and you lose, I guess, certain capabilities, that's one of them that goes. You can't hear it. So when we focus on our children and what they're seeing and able to relate to us, that we don't become bent out of shape, that we're able to handle information that's different than what we were led to believe. And we are reinforced this in our educational system, to be dumbed down, to be unaware, and to not question authority. authority rules our lives. Anyway, I didn't want to go on too long in case somebody else would like to talk. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Claudia. That was absolutely wonderful and very, very educational. And we have about 20 minutes left. I would really like to open up the show for anybody that's tuned in and listening. Anything that you have on your mind, we would just love it if you would share what's going on. Maybe, Kelsey, you could tell us what happened at the when you went down to that show in Los Angeles. Anybody else, please add your contribution.
Hi, this is Henry. I'm here with Kelsey. And yeah, we just went to the Conscious Life Expo in Los Angeles, California, and we had some fun there sharing the new you, new sound that Bob mentioned earlier with people. And it's a lot like the Bible and all the things you guys have brought up, Claudia and Bob and Sandy today. It's like this phenomena, like the gods and all the stuff that the world controllers can present in front of people, take their focus away from doing something that makes sense. And so we saw all these different psychics and spiritual things and crystals and just all there was just like endless stuff going on everywhere. And it was all created stuff. And sure, everybody can do what they want and they can you know, do these things like their meditations and their healings and all sorts of stuff, but realistically it's just going to keep you reincarnating here in creation under various levels for more lifetimes. And so we had a lot of fun because we're sharing something very real that makes sense for everyone. Cool. And a lot of people were open to it, and they listened to us, and we had a lot of fun. And Kelsey and I even had the opportunity to be interviewed by this kind guy, his name was Brad, and he had a TV show called Extraordinary, which is broadcast on YouTube, Vimeo, a TV channel, Amazon Prime, Facebook, and maybe one other place too. And so we got to share the new year with people that way. And it's a lot of fun because everybody really is looking for what we're sharing, which is the real universe and your real awareness, which really does make sense, and it has nothing to do with anything that's been created and has no authorities, no restrictions, and it's pure and sincere and wonderful. And so, yeah, we had a lot of fun with that, and I can see how what you're talking about with how the reptilians created the humans and the Bible and everything, how they've just kept creating more and more stuff for, you know, thousands and thousands of years just to keep people's focus away from seeing their real awareness. So now we have a wonderful opportunity to do that, to recognize our real awareness with what Dwayne the Great Writer has brought forward. And for everybody, he's been through a lot, and he's come here to present something wonderful for everyone. And it's up to every individual to recognize it and then to take part and earn their way out of here to the real universe. So thanks for sharing, and that's a little bit from me.
Well, could you tell everybody how to contact Dwayne the Great Writer and let people know some of the books he read and some of the YouTube videos and some of the projects, how people can really take advantage of Dwayne the Great Writer? Can you explain that for everybody?
Yeah, of course. We have a website called wonderfulworldwideeducators.com, and on there you can go to the new books tab, and you can purchase and read some of the new books he's read, which are wonderful, real educational books, like beyond anything that anyone else is talking about here, because no one else is referencing the real universes. And he also writes titles or new articles. There's a new articles tab people can click, and they can read things that Dwayne writes almost every day, like new updates or the real news or the real views from Dwayne every day or so. And Yeah, they can also find him on Facebook. We have group Skype calls that you can listen to Dwayne or talk with Dwayne on. That's the Become Involved tab on wonderfulworldwideeducators.com. Also, if you go to Kelsey Lynn Brown on YouTube, you can listen to The Real Wake Up Now, which is Dwayne talking, answering a lot of really interesting questions in a 7 or 8 part series called The Real Wake Up Now. So that's a few things for people to get started, and there's always more different ways to contribute and always more to learn. Thanks, Bob.
Well, thank you very much. That was wonderful. You know, one of the things that I learned years ago was, you know, even in the corporation, they talk about the middle path. You know, I had a hard time picturing what the middle path was. You know, don't go to the left and don't go to the right, just stay the course down the middle. But in the last 6 months, I've come to realize that the middle path has nothing to do with, like a road you're traveling on. It's not like you're driving down the freeway and there's an exit to the right and an exit to the left, or just drive straight ahead and don't get off at the exit. What I'm finding the middle road is, don't latch on to anything in physical creation, because whenever you get involved with anything in the physical creation, it locks you in to multiple reincarnations. The secret of life is, and moving on to the real world, is to disencumber yourself, detach yourself from the ways of physical creation, and then the doors will open for the real side. So that's an experience that I am experiencing. Is there anybody else that would like to add something? You know, we have about another 10 or so minutes. Please, anybody, anything on your mind that you want to share, I wish you would do it.
This is Kelsey again. I would suggest that people go to my YouTube channel, Kelsey Lynn Brown, and it's Lynn with an E. It's 3 words. And when you get there, there's something on the right-hand side of my YouTube channel. And it's pretty small letters, but it's on the right-hand side. And it's titled Featured Channels. It's just 2 words. It's Featured Channels. So I have 4 featured channels there. And one of them that I would suggest that people definitely click on and check out and go listen to is the channel called New Kevin Smith, 3 words, N-U Kevin Smith. And when you click on either that name or the little picture by that name, it's going to take you to Kevin Smith from the UK's YouTube. And then you'll be on his YouTube channel, and it'll probably say home. And then on to the right of home, it says videos, and you can click videos. And then you're going to see a plethora of videos, and you can keep scrolling down, and it's going to continue to load more videos. I'm sure there's got to be, you know, maybe 100 videos at least on there. And those are Skype call excerpts from the past couple years. They're from, for sure, the past weeks. Because Kevin Smith, after every Skype call on Saturday and Sunday that we have, these are private group calls that anyone's invited to. I have to call you into them, though, so I need your contact info if anyone listening is interested. Kevin takes these recordings from these calls, and he edits them down into shorter segments and uploads them to his YouTube for people to listen. And these are real side experiences. These are people's views. These are projects that we are doing, updates of projects. And these are questions and answers. This includes with Dwayne the Great Writer, what Claudie has been sharing here, all sorts of presentations that Kevin has put together from the Skype calls. So if people want to really start to learn and understand what we're doing and get some background and some motivation to step up themselves and get involved, then I would suggest to go to that YouTube channel, New Kevin Smith, and listen to those videos he has there. If you go to my YouTube channel, I have some of those videos And I have some other ones that are even older from the real side experiences that people have had. And there's different videos that I've uploaded on my channel that other people have made as well of their real side experiences. And there's also other videos on my channel of different topics that are just taking place in the world. I have a few 8-hour videos. So one of those 8-hour videos I compiled from videos that Claudette sent me about Enki and the Orion Queen and the Galactic Wars with Sirius as well. So that's there, some background information. But mainly what we're presenting is the new you and the real universes and Rebizar and Dwayne the Great Writer. And so the other thing I would suggest that people listen to on my YouTube channel, Kelsey Lynn Brown, is a playlist. So when you're on someone's YouTube channel, so when you're on my YouTube channel, you'll see that it says playlist somewhere underneath in my picture and the banner picture I have. So you just click on playlist, and you're going to see that I have a lot of playlists. I have a playlist with different kids that I interviewed. It's called New Kids. I have a Kelsey's Your Choices live video. So those are all of these different live videos that we've done on Facebook with myself, Henry, Val, Eric Oak, Mary Duffy, so many people, Sandy, Staling on Facebook. And there's probably 16 different playlists you can check out. But the one I really suggest people go listen to, it's a 3-part series, and it's titled Your Choices. It's also on the front of wonderfulworldwideeducators.com. You'll see the first big video is parts 1 through 3 of the with the Orion Queen with Claudette and Dwayne the Great Writer. And then there's a the next one will be Your Choices episodes. There's 3 of those where Claudette and Dwayne the Great Writer go over people being put into the Phantom Zone, like the chemtrail pilots and Harry and these types of people that are ruining people on the planet and destroying the Earth. And also part of that 3-part series is experiences about Marjorie Klimp that passed over to the real side and what really happened with her, because that's a huge prototype for people that are out there sharing and doing workshops about unconditional love and love and sharing all these things, because what really happened with Miss Marjorie is a very real that Sandy and Claudie shared in that episode, and that can be a lot of people that other people are following here on the earth could be happening to as well. And there, the first episode, if I remember right, is where you, Sandy and Bob went to the seminar of the corporation, which again, that corporation and other corporations like it in spiritual places and centers, what people are thinking is it's this wonderful love and light. And like Sandy saw, there was reptilians everywhere at that seminar. So I suggest that people listen to those, because those are great views, experiences, and lessons or things to learn from. And that the title of that YouTube playlist is called Your Choices, and it's 3 videos. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Kelsey. That was absolutely wonderful, and I encourage all listeners to actually listen, because your eyes will be open to what's real. This it may sound like we're some religious guru niche somewhere, but this is the real scoop. If you're searching for the truth or trying to find out what's really going on, you've found the right source. So make sure you follow through and check out all these videos and audio tapes and everything that we have, because we do have the answer you've been searching for many, many, many lifetimes. So anybody else have anything to add? I'd sure like to hear from you.
Hi, this is Tim in Oregon.
Hi, Tim. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just thinking about the attached entities you were talking about in the beginning that you were saying that fellow on that radio show was talking about. And it kind of seems like when people have fits of rage, that maybe their auras are, and other things, but their auras are kind of opened up somehow. And the way this world is, it seems like they, whatever the real being is, in this vehicle, this physical vehicle, gets kicked out by other entities, like called depossession. Maybe that's like the physical body dying. We'd be leaving the physical, but in this way, it seems like not only attaching, but they're able to have the power to depossess, to kick the real being out and take over that body. You see so much insanity or whatever it's called on Earth, people just running around shooting people and all these brutalitarians, the way they think and act and live. Oh, it's just something that I wonder about. And then also the reptilians and this creation of the smart monkeys. And I was wondering how that relates to these other psych realms, our other bodies, like the astral and the causal and the mental and the etheric. I just wonder what has that got to do with reptilians? I don't know if Cotty had something she could mention about that, or it seems like we're just talking about the physical, their DNA and the apes or the monkeys or whatever is DNA, and that's all in the psych realm stuff.
Yes, Claudia.
Hi, Claudia.
Yes. Hi. Really great question. How do these bodies get connected to our physical body? Well, again, it is a ability of the Orion progenitors that actually created us by manipulation of the DNA. And they were able to change or attach to us certain organs. I'm going to say not a physical organ, but you can have an organ that is non-corporeal. And that would mean that you could access other frequencies. So that's why they were easily able to make us aware of certain commands they gave to us mentally. And it started a whole different type of awareness.
Let me interrupt for a second.
Yes.
Let me interrupt, Claudia, for a second. Could you put your phone on mute because there's so much background noise? Somebody else has a lot of background noise. Not you, Claudia, but somebody else has a lot of background noise. Okay, go ahead, Claudia.
So we were easily mentally commanded to do certain or see certain scenarios. Like I had mentioned before, you've gone to a nightclub and saw a hypnotist take a person from the audience and mentally tell them, okay, you're a chicken. Cluck like a chicken and flap your wings. And people would do that. So as we become more and more aware of it, information is given to us. Sometimes it's given to us in the entertainment form. We've all seen motion pictures, gone to the movies and see space shows or other kinds of shows that show a person questioning his present physical reality. And this is what's happening for a lot of people. They're starting to ask. And we're not the only ones asking. You're not, 8 billion people on the planet? Everybody's having an experience or seeing something unusual, excuse me, and they're trying to figure it out and find out what's happening, and they're asking questions. They go to their priest or their minister or their shaman or their witch doctor. Everybody has an answer. Now, some of those people that are able to have real experiences on the real side, which is our dream state, excuse me, we are able to get answers. In the new presentation, we offer the suggestion to sing the new you, you, you. New you, you, you. 15 minutes before sleep or 15 minutes after we wake up and pose a question. Always the question is answered, usually immediately, but we are not able to access the answer immediately. We may need to see it in a book form or have a conversation or overhear a conversation between other people, and the answer will be given to us, sometimes right away, sometimes a day or two later. And as we go through our life, we may verify the information that's given to us by circumstances that appear in our lives. And we go, oh, okay, well, that's a possibility. I don't know for sure. So every time we go into this new you presentation session of just singing that little two words, new you, we are able to access other realities. The part of where what is real and what isn't, it's up to us to observe and make a choice or a decision on. We have free will, so we can choose to do anything we want. We can choose to get up in the morning or stay in bed. We can choose to eat vegetables or meat, or we can choose to eat fruit or ice cream or candy bars or cookies. I like cookies. Okay, so the result of that decision affects us later. Sometimes if we overdo it, people get diabetes or they come down with cancer. And you say, well, how could I get cancer? I'm eating healthy and this, that, and the other, or I had a heart attack or whatever. Because there's a thing called tap lining that the extraterrestrials can do. They lock onto us in certain parts of our body and are able to siphon off our energies or insert different frequencies that disrupt our normal gestational cycle. So as we go through life, we have many opportunities to observe stuff that doesn't make sense. So take the time to look at something to see if it makes sense to you. And then go a little bit further. Go the extra mile. Research. Find out. See what the people in India are doing, or the people in China, or the people, the Aborigines in New Zealand and Australia. How do they see life? The Eskimos, any of the indigenous population tribes who still live the ancient way of their ancestors. They live simply. They don't have an agenda, and they're not out to earn the next dollar that they have to pay rent on some land that they don't own. All of life has been geared to us being enslaved. And I mean enslaved in that we have a certain lifestyle that right now in the modern world we live. We chase our dollars. And there's the old song, working for the weekend. And so we have an opportunity to experience different things. Again,
okay,
my
Claudie,
suggestion is size you. Yes.
Claudie, thank you so much for that. We're down to like 45 seconds to go. We're running out of time. And you've been absolutely wonderful. And, Tim, I hope that answers part of your question. We'll have to bring this up again on one of our future shows. But I would like to conclude by everybody all at once. Let's everybody do the new you to end the show. And so let's do that. And I'll say goodbye. We'll say new you and goodbye for everybody. So on the count of three. One, two, three. New Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Grazie.
Grazie.